From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Kodiak's fisheries debates kicked off on Monday, October 3rd, with two challengers in the governor's race. Current Governor Mike Dunleavy did not attend the debate. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports both candidates spent time deriding Dunleavy's policies and outlining their visions for fisheries management.
The need for more science to manage Alaska's fisheries came up early and often during Monday's debate. So did climate change. And both candidates say the current governor's budget has hamstrung the state's ability to do its own research on changing ocean conditions. Former governor and independent candidate Bill Walker.
I sat next to a young lady that was a fishery research biologist for fishing game and was laid out because of budget cuts. We need the best available information in making the decisions. We need the best available research.
Democrat Les Guerra immediately ripped into Governor Dunleavy's budget cuts. He says the commercial fishing industry is just one area where Alaskans are suffering from the consequences.
We can't retain teachers. We can't retain police. I want a strong Department of Fish and Game that does studies. You know what a Department of Fish and Game commissioner does now? He testifies and talks about all the studies he's asked the feds to pay for.
Bycatch, which is the incidental catch of non-target species like salmon, also came up early and often. The governor created the Bycatch Review Task Force last year, but Guerra called it powerless.
And he put it together so that its recommendations would come out after the legislative session was over, so they couldn't do anything with it.
Guerra says picking the right people for Alaska's seats on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is a better way to address the issue of bycatch. Walker also says the timing of the task force was convenient for the incumbent governor as he runs for re-election, but he'd keep it around if he were elected. He says the work the group is doing is important.
I like the idea of it being a year-round, not just, you know, it's going to expire in November. This issue is not going to expire in November.
Governor Dunleavy didn't attend Monday's fisheries debate, which is held in Kodiak every election year. He wasn't at the last one in 2018 either. The conversation between Walker and Guerra was amicable and at times lighthearted. Both candidates say they're tentatively in favor of hatcheries as long as they don't harm wild fish. They talked about the significance of the federal bipartisan infrastructure law and its potential to reinvigorate working waterfronts in coastal communities. Mariculture also came up. Walker says the industry could be a boon for Alaska, but it needs more support and investment. And he claims seaweed makes pretty good beer, too. Guerra says he'd favor small business loans for fishermen to get started in kelp farming.
I would like to do everything we can to expand this industry. It's a shoulder season industry, so if you're fishing in the summer, you can still do mariculture when you're not out fishing.
Both candidates were asked about their long-term visions for Alaska's seafood industry. Walker identified barriers to entry for new fishermen as one of the biggest challenges he sees for the industry.
Every fishing boat in my world is a small business, and many times it's a family business. And so I want to make sure that that is continued on and on for generations.
When asked who they would choose for Alaska's Fish and Game Commissioner, both Walker and Guerra said they want someone who is passionate and has management skills. Guerra says he's looking for someone who can talk fish.
It would be somebody who is not there or selected because of their politics, number one. I want them to be somebody who will make decisions based on science.
Monday's debate was the first of three fisheries debates in Kodiak, held over two nights. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The Kodiak fishery debate concluded with forums for the U.S. House and Senate. The four House candidates agreed on a lot. Their views differed, though, on a House bill to reauthorize the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the primary law that governs fishing in federal waters. Congresswoman Mary Peltola was the only candidate to support it. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Republican House candidate Nick Begich is against the bill and skeptical of a provision in it that would add two Alaska tribal seats to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
I'm encouraged to see their Alaskan seats, but nevertheless, you know, I sort of question that decision to so radically change the composition of the council.
Libertarian Chris Bai, a fishing guide from Fairbanks, says he likes the idea of adding more seats for Alaskans, but
I would appreciate it if it was more interior focused and not necessarily based on a color of skin.
Former Republican Governor Sarah Palin says she doesn't know enough about the Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization bill to discuss it in the level of detail posed by the question.
When it comes to the inside baseball specifics of all that you had just read there, in a debate, it's kind of difficult to say absolutely yes or no, whether you would support something or not. When you have it in front of you, you know, you don't know the context. You can't read all of it.
Palin says she suspects the bill gives too much leeway to federal bureaucrats. Newly elected Congresswoman Mary Peltola, a Democrat, says she was proud to vote for the bill when it passed out of the House Resources Committee last month. She says the late Congressman Don Young also saw the need to add two Alaska Native seats to the North Pacific Council.
The council works well for the biggest, the wealthiest, and the most connected among us. But if you don't happen to be big and wealthy and connected, it is very hard to get any inroads in the council process.
The Kodiak fishery debate has been a feature of Alaska election season for more than 30 years. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
79 million sockeye returned to Bristol Bay this summer. It was the largest run on record, and it's great news for the commercial fishery. But as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the record run is also reigniting conversations about big disparities in who gets to fish and how the state's limited entry system has affected the communities closest to the runs.
For a long time, Alaska had no limits on how many people could sign up to commercial fish. Dillingham resident and Chukayong tribal member William P. Johnson has fished since he was a kid in the 1940s.
In the early years, there were many people who were participating in the fishery, and they hired their local people in there from their village to participate with them.
But in the 1960s, the number of out-of-state fishermen was growing, while salmon runs were shrinking. And in 1972, Alaskans voted for the state to amend the Constitution to start limiting how many commercial fishing permits were allowed in regions like Bristol Bay, a system called limited entry. The goal was to reduce the pressure on fisheries and financially sustain the fishermen who depended on them. But in the 50 years since, local permit ownership in Bristol Bay has actually declined by half.
With the out-migration, you can see the effect that it has on the monetary return to the individual village people through their commercial fishermen.
The new system quickly and fundamentally changed the Bristol Bay fishery and the communities that relied on it, according to Rachel Donkersloat. She led the latest study on the impacts of limited entry. Donkersloat's report says 7 years into the program, Alaska Native permit holdings in Bristol Bay had already declined by 21%.
As is often the case, these types of management systems don't serve villages. In fact, they tend to undermine village fishing livelihoods and village sustainability.
According to Donkersloat and other researchers, there were issues with the new system from the beginning. The permit application was confusing and ended up favoring non-rural fishermen. Fred Teresi came to Dillingham as a lawyer with the state's legal services in the 1970s and remembers helping local fishermen through the change. He says before limited entry, anyone could fish as long as they had a boat. Limited entry introduced permits people only received once. The permit application was supposed to favor rural fishermen, but Teresi says it fell short.
It was a kind of a complicated application by design because it was meant to determine who really needed a permit, who really had been relying on it in the past.
The state tried to address those problems. It created the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission as part of the new system, which held legal hearings in rural Alaska to handle legal challenges. But limited entry meant that permits were freely transferable, so they could be bought, gifted, or inherited. That meant that many local people who didn't have access to other sources of income sold their permits and could not afford to buy back into the fishery. Johnson, the Dillingham fisherman, says he was able to hold on to his permit during that time because he worked all year round. But many local fishermen weren't able to do so.
People, because of poor runs, began selling their permits. And of course, that impacted mainly the local people. They couldn't afford to make a living fishing, and so they ended up, many of them ended up selling their permits just to get by for a couple of years.
In the nearly 50 years since the change, the value of Bristol Bay's fishery has grown exponentially. But most of that revenue leaves the state. Donkersloot says residents of Bristol Bay also tend to earn less than urban and non-resident fishermen, even though fishing is more likely to be their only source of income.
What matters most in terms of the benefits from fisheries is where the permit holder lives. It's not where fish are landed. It's not these other factors at play. It's where the permit holder lives.
When limited entry was implemented, the report says the state didn't build in safeguards to help local operators continue to fish. Donkersloot says the gap in access to the fishery between locals and other fishermen often boils down to financial circumstances, like access to capital and credit history. Donkersloot says when the state crafted limited entry, it also didn't take into account cultural differences around fishing.
That gets back to kind of the misfit between trying to support rural fishery participation and programs like limited entry, which individualize and commodify the right to fish.
The outmigration of fishing permits from rural Alaska is a controversial and complex topic that legislators, Alaska Native community leaders, residents, and economists have repeatedly tried to address. Donkersloot says in order to address the disparity, the public policy surrounding the fishery needs to change.
This is about, you know, sustainable economic development in Bristol Bay, and you cannot have that conversation without thinking about fisheries.
The report lays out a few paths forward that Donkersloot says have worked in other regions and countries that have dealt with similar problems. They include provisions for small-scale operations, apprenticeship permits, and creating locally designated permits. As the fishery celebrates another huge run, Donkersloot says it's important to think about who is able to participate in the fishery and why. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.